Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, right before we went on break, we started to talk about an email from a listener, Laurie in Severn, Maryland, and fear of potato salad. So the story is, the story goes like this. Mother was out of town. Father made a vat of potato salad. The kids refused to eat it. As a consequence, he made them eat it for every meal for the next 3 days.
Oh, no.
Now all I can think about when someone says potato salad is trying to spit in my napkin and tuck it behind the radiator.
Oh, my God. How many? Oh, behind the radiator? Oof.
So now it's, it sounds like we're getting into... usually we have these great stories from listeners about, you know, the wonderful cooks of their formative years.
Right.
Now I think we're going to be dealing with everyone's parental food issues.
Right, exactly. How many times did you sit at the table waiting for the cold peas to just disappear?
So we have an email from Ginger in Catonsville. Your first caller reminded me of my former dislike of olives also. My dad was kind of a practical joker when I was a kid. He thought he was funny anyway. So he knew I did not like green olives when I was very little. Not such a rare thing, really. One time he handed me green olive and told me it was a green jelly bean.
Oh, man.
I ate it and, of course, turned wrong side out. Naturally, I hated olives for years after, until one day when I was a young adult, I went golfing with my grandfather. We had a fine day on the links, and as it turns out, part of his golfing outing ritual was to have a small thermos with vodka ice and olives marinating. So when we got back to our vehicle, he broke out his golf cocktail. He gave me a sip and an olive. I loved it, and I've been eating olives and drinking martinis ever since.
Very good change.
So
that's awesome. That's a good story. Jelly bean.
That's such a complicated tale of child rearing and family issues tied into poor little green olives that can be delicious. I don't know what to say about
right,
that.
Right.
We have a couple of calls lined up. Jim in Baltimore. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Jim.
First time I've heard the show. It's good.
Thank you.
Glad you're enjoying it.
It's good. What I haven't heard is the influence from immigrants on our cuisine. Mm-hmm. I mean, alongside my New York Times cookbook up on the shelf here in the kitchen, I've got 125 cookbooks from all over the world.
That's great.
Yeah, you're serious business, Jim.
That's awesome.
So I was married to a Eurasian woman who opened the door. My mother opened the door in 1945 when she fed me a Greek cuisine. Mm-hmm. I used to go to school and put ketchup on everything because basically our cuisine, as I can see from my history and from looking at the Betty Crocker books, is basically German and English, a very bland diet.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to put ketchup on everything to make my food in the cafeteria taste as nice as mom's at home.
Well, it sounds like mom was a pretty good cook, but your comment about immigrant, I mean, all of our food is immigrant food. Just initially, the U.S. was an English colony, so.
Well, that's all true, but when I look at my shelf over here and see books from Vietnam and from India and from Thailand and Indonesia, that has not much to do with the old English and German diet.
Not so much. Well, thanks for the call, Jim.
Certainly.
Yes.
Let's go to Mary and Frederick.
Hi.
Mary, how are you?
I have a fear of haggis.
Again, you're not alone.
I have to admit, I went to Scotland on vacation recently, and everyone I spoke to when I came back to the States was asking me if I'd had haggis.
Did you?
Well, my question for Mary is, what is the note alongside your call is haggis-Scottish food. So you can answer a question, Mary. Is that the only Scottish food that people perceive?
Well, it's the only one my parents droned into my head.
Have you ever had it?
I went to Scotland when I was a teenager, and they said, oh, you have to have haggis. It's so good. And I did like Braunschweiger and Scrapple and things like that. And I said, oh, it's a lot like that. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. So I ordered it. And I was completely grossed out. And I'm a person who will eat sweetbreads and liver and things like that.
Sure.
But haggis, I'll eat tripe and hog maul and...
Yeah, you're talking about
a lot
of good stuff.
Yes, but I love hog maul.
Not haggis.
All right.
Well, thank you for the
and
call.
And the other thing I'm surprised nobody said yet is a fear of souse.
Ah. Yeah. That's just organ meats in general seem to be an issue for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I initially liked souse until I made it one time. And I unfortunately was pregnant at the time I was making it, and halfway through the process, suddenly the odors got to me, and that was the end. The whole batch got dumped out, and that was the end of my souse.
Yeah, no. It's when you want robust flavors, sometimes they're robust aromas that can overwhelm you on that path, right?
Tremendous. Well, I'd like to like haggis, but I really would like to know what's in it.
What it's supposed to be is some of the meat from the lamb, the almost all of the digestive tract, and oats, and that all those things need to be very, very fresh. And from the younger the lamb, usually the better it's going to be. And then it all marinates with whiskey.
Okay.
And if you season it well with sea salt and that whiskey, and it gets baked in, it's almost like the version of a terrine, because it's done in it's done in the stomach. It's done actually in the lamb tripe. The whole entire thing is stuffed.
Okay.
And you should be serving a slice of that, and it should be cooked in a water bath or in a warm atmosphere, a warm and humid atmosphere for a while. But I think people's capability to enjoy it and be excited about it has more to do with marinating themselves in the whiskey and less to do with the seasoning of the haggis itself. Because while I was in Scotland and had some very good cooking, especially very good fresh fish from the North Sea, I really had disgusting haggis when I was there.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough dish to make really well for people to like. So it's
thank you for the call, Mary.
Thank you.
Let's go to B in Pikesville.
Hi,
Bea.
How are you, Bea?
When I was a little girl, this is in the 30s, when my parents were trying to save money, my mother had cooked some cabbage in with some ham that she was boiling, and it was greasy and disgusting, and I was forced to eat it. I absolutely had to eat it, and I complained bitterly, and then I threw up later on. So for quite a few years, I would not touch boiled cabbage. I'll eat cabbage in other forms, but I sure don't want to eat boiled.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Thank you for the call, Bea.
Thanks, Bea.
You're welcome. Right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Usually we have listeners tell us that we've made them feel much more excited about food and much more excited to eat and very hungry listening to the program. This may not be the program
today
that's going to get that done.
Yeah. They're going to go exercise after the show instead.
So, Cindy, how about a fear or an aversion that you had that you overcame, and maybe tie it into a dish? Or what's the dish that got that done? Let's tell them something that's a little more interesting or appetizing.
Okay. Eel. When I had eel the first time when I was working in Charleston, my chef was good friends with a French chef down the road. And one night he walked in the back door with bouillabaisse made from his region of France. And it was, the broth was amazing, and I loved it and was really excited to get to try real bouillabaisse made by this quite amazing chef. And his name was Serge Claire, and he had a restaurant in Charleston called Marianne, which is no longer there. And I just hated the way the eel tasted. And I was a young cook. I mean, I was just really, so into food.
Eel has pretty strong oily flavor.
Yeah, it was a disappointment to me that I had something I was so excited to taste and just really disliked it. But we've been to Europe on many trips, and I love eel now. And I think, it's a little bit like, everything that's made. It is how it's made, how fresh it is. You already talked about that a little bit. And I'm just glad that I had the opportunity to try it when I was so young, and then have it again and learn to love it.
It is well. I love eel. I had a chance to have eel in Sardinia one time, and the tradition there is they cook it on a spear, on a big live wood fire, like on the beach, that sort of thing.
That sounds great.
It is a strong smelling creature when it is cooking on a live wood fire, but oh my goodness, it is sweet and oily and with great olive oil and lemon and tomato and.
Yeah, I'm
amazing
sure.
Stuff.
Perfect.
You just
great.
Need big fat glass of Vermentino, nice, almost like salty, citrusy, big-bodied white wine from Sardinia to go with that.
How about you? What's your food here, Tony?
When I was a little kid, broccoli. I hated broccoli so much, and I don't know why. And I think it was because I'd had it in some sort of like terrible frozen casserole or something, or it may have been part of my grandmother's cooking adventures. I'm not certain what set it wrong in my head. I distinguished my grandmother, who was a wonderful, lovely woman, with my great-grandmother, who was a wonderful cook, because her daughter was not so talented in the kitchen. And I think something just set me in the wrong direction, to the point where my father would tease me about, I mean, I'd have to go to the hospital for something, and he'd bring me a card, get well, with a broccoli seed packet or something inside of it, because he's just a big prankster.
Sure.
But I don't know exactly what happened, but it's recently we changed the menu in a restaurant, and we took a broccoli dish off the menu that had been there for some years. And to think about from when I was a kid, you were talking about history and things that people didn't want. But no one wanted broccoli in 1975 when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. It was out of a can or it was frozen. It wasn't very interesting.
Right.
We took this dish off the menu. We must have had 10 emails or questions from guests. What happened? I know that you updated your menu, but what happened?
Where's that broccoli dish? Garlic and how good it is. Yeah.
To take you back to what's happened in the last like 10, 15 years. You know, what are the leading products that people all of a sudden are excited about that even a decade ago they were just turned off by? We're deal breakers. We used to talk about building building menus and controlling how things flowed out of the kitchen or not, sort of based on what the deal breaking garnishes were. Mm-hmm. Olives used to be one of those things.
Brussels sprouts were collard greens,
they're lining up at the market this morning. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. They're lining up for kale.
Kale. Oh, kale is Swiss chard used to be. If you put that on something, no one would eat it.
Let's tuck one or two last calls in here. Jim and Frederick, are you there, Jim?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good morning.
How are you?
It's not a fear that I have, but almost every Sunday morning growing up, my mom would serve kidney stew and waffles, and I enjoy it greatly. But two or three of my siblings, actually six or eight of them, refused to eat it.
Wow, big family.
Yeah, but I still make it, and I enjoy it. One of my sisters does, but the others will just turn up the nose. And I think it's the organ meat deal.
Yes.
And it's got a very strong smell cooking. But aside from that, that's the deal. Now, myself, I have been trying to find a phobia since I started listening to this program. And the only thing I can come close to is sea cucumber, which I did try once in Fiji, and I will not try again.
Oh, I can give you, if you want to talk off the air, I can give you an address for a restaurant in Spain in Basque Country that has spectacular grilled sea cucumber. Believe it or not.
You'd have to buy me the ticket to get me to try it.
Well, thank you very much for the call,
You're
Jim.
You're quite welcome.
I don't think we're getting you the
Thanks,
ticket.
Thanks, Jim.
We have one last question. I think it's kind of terrific. It's a fear of wedding buffet. Cindy, you want to address the rest of the fear of the wedding buffet issue there?
It says what to eat and not get sick. Last time he got food poisoning, what to avoid for upcoming wedding. a buffet is a tough situation. I mean, everything has to be, food product has to be held either below 45 or 100 or above 140 degrees. So, you're going to want to make sure that whatever you're eating is apparently cold or apparently very hot. And then you should be okay. And, assuming that the food was prepared the right way in the beginning. But if it's a hot summer day and you're outside and it has, who's the person that didn't like mayonnaise? He'd be right at this point. Wouldn't eat anything with mayonnaise.
Or the potato salad. Degree day.
Yeah, don't eat that. Or the egg salad. All those things are not going to do well. No food should be in that temperature range. So
things we did not have a chance to get to are frog's legs, the classic French delicacy that I've seen so many make faces about.
Well, and people don't like fish with heads on, too. And
that
kind of fear is a shame to me because that just tells you, or should tell you, how fresh the fish is and how special it might be. And I wish, this is as a chef, I wish we could get over this, I don't want to see the head on my shrimp. I don't want to see the head on my fish. It should be a good sign.
It means,
and it's old world cooking.
It means the head is the first thing. I mean, it's not a joke. The head is the first thing that rots on the fish, so it's going to be fresher. They have no choice but to have it be a very fresh product. Otherwise, they couldn't be there.
Exactly.
The other thing we didn't get to snakes. I had a Chinese roommate in college and had marvelous snake. And a lot of people will say, what does it taste like? And, well, people say frog's leg tastes like chicken. Well, snake that I had, the black snakes, definitely tasted like
really?
Chicken.
That's amazing. Yeah, I've never
In other
eaten
words, it was
snake.
just mild protein and had to be cooked through but terrific.
Okay. Should I read this?
Yeah.
This is from Terry Shriver, and I used to hate ugly food like mushrooms, liver, pate, etc. I figured out that you always need to try to eat it when you are hungry. I learned that I like pâté because I was at a cocktail party and starving and didn't know what I was eating, and I loved it. Same thing with mushrooms. I have not made it past strong brie cheese, though. That's great. Well, you know, that's it. It is. So sometimes it is necessity that brings us to, as we were talking about earlier, to trying something that we might not, or you know, we may eat things because we can't afford something else. So, you know.
I think my favorite call that we have had on one of the live programs was the call about growing up with relatively simple means and being introduced to products by someone else's generosity, because it is genuinely the nicest thing that we get to do. Is to find something really interesting and to get it across to someone and to share your excitement for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's largely why we do the program.
Absolutely. It's so fun to share that.
So have you ever seen me scared of food?
Never. You are the bravest eater I've ever seen in my life.
So what have I eaten that thought I was crazy?
Well, this is a little off topic, but I saw you accidentally eat anchovies one time, but there's a problem with that. So,
well, that's an allergy.
That's
it's
an
not
allergy.
A fear. I like them, and I tried them every couple of years.
Right.
We had an email from. I was thinking about all of the Americans that go to Paris, because Paris is marvelous and it's a great city to eat and to walk and to play in. Andouillette is a sausage you'll see on menus, and you'll think it's andouille sausage, which is the Cajun sausage you love to work with.
Right.
Well, andouillette frites is a tripe sausage. It's essentially spicy chitlins with French fries on the plate. It is something that I love.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a mildly aromatic dish.
No, it's...
You can smell it five tables away.
Absolutely.
And we had this great email from Kathy in Roland Park talking about her husband ordering it. And I'm confident he thought it was andouille sausage from Cajun country.
Big difference.
Anyway, thanks for listening to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you.